I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. Don't tell the other podcasts. I should go.
Is it any wonder why we're still going on and on and on? Does anybody ever ask what happened to that one winter?
Hey, you are listening to Talking Like a Teen, the podcast where we have a tendency to rush back into our past. I am that third verse of Lady Killers by Lush that may or may not be about Matt Sharp, also known as Adrian.
And I am River's apartment that he painted all the walls black.
I was just reading that and like... there's just so many things where I'm like, this is just so painfully on brand. What could we possibly say that the text just doesn't give you in and of itself? Like, what can we really add to this?
Rivers is really out here walking so that Tom DeLonge with his candle could run.
So, okay, how about this then? We have our Tom DeLonge candle and I guess our Rivers Cuomo curtains. You know, since I know painting your apartment black is probably going to be really hard, but like...
yeah. Get our blackout curtains.
Hell yeah. How's it going, Infrindo?
It's going, man. You pitched an idea.
That I did. Well, I pitched an idea and I just want to point out, once again, for the record, now this is on wax, so to speak, you agreed to this and thought it would be a fun idea. So if anything, who's more foolish, the fool or the fool that follows?
I guess we'll find out at the end, won't we?
So I don't know if you remember, and I don't know if anyone who's listening remembers, way back on episode 30, and God, that was probably what, 2022, you and I were set up to record one night, and I don't even remember what we were actually going to be talking about. And I remember telling you.
You didn't tell me.
I didn't tell you, that's right. Which, why did you even let me do that?
It's literally the only time that you've pulled that on me where you're like, we're going to record. And I'm like, okay, do I need to prep anything? And you're like, no, just show up.
Because I knew once I said what I said, you would know exactly what we were going to talk about. Because it's something that we had talked about, I think, intermittently throughout the tenure of our friendship. And especially since doing a podcast. But not to kind of spoil the opening of that show, but I had just started with the statement, Rivers Cuomo is full of shit. And we spent the next like hour. At first it started like we were dunking. Like, we were just making fun. But I honestly have to say, though, in all honesty, for a very long portion of my life, at least up until my 20s, Weezer was one of my favorite bands of all time. Now, to be fair, this is mid-90s. You know, I'm just getting to, like, as much as I grew up with music, I'm getting music for myself and, like, for me, not just stuff my parents, you know, put me on to. So it's like, you know, Nirvana's done, so we're doing Garbage, we're doing Foo Fighters, Bush. And in the midst of all that, there's these four dorky-ass dudes that were singing about Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler, and I'm like, I love those two people, even though they're fictional. And I would draw that W everywhere. So it's funny that now I'm at a point where, like, I kind of crack on Weezer when they were kind of a big deal for me for a while. Which, I don't know if you shared any of that. Did you grow up a big, I don't know, Weeze head?
No. I had the Blue Album. I had Pinkerton. And I had the Green Album. But Weezer was just... they were just another alternative band that I liked. I liked a lot of bands from this scene, but I don't remember having any particular draw to this band that I didn't have for other bands kind of doing the same shit.
Okay.
It's not until much, much later when I find out kind of more about the inner machinations of Rivers Cuomo as a human being that Weezer becomes interesting to me.
Right. And that's kind of what started all of this, because even on that episode, as much as we were talking about the Africa cover, you know, Enter Sandman, which we decidedly not enjoy any of that.
Yeah, it turns out it's bad.
But it's funny because I was in pitching it to you, and then one night I was kind of rambling and the kids were like, what are you talking about? So I explained to them what we were eventually going to be talking about. It's the fact that Weezer has been around for over 30 years, like close to 35 at this point, damn near. And, you know, they sold like, what, 10 million albums in the U.S. and over 35 worldwide kind of thing. Like, they've sold millions. They sell out arenas now. And yet, they were this kind of lovable, dorky, kind of, you know, nerdy alternative rock band in an era where we had just got off of grunge and teen pop hadn't really blown up yet. And you would think once Pinkerton happened and they implode, they were done. Then the internet finds them and then they resurge and then they kind of low-key shit the bed in 2005 with making probably one of the just universally disliked songs ever. But yet that album also propels them into superstardom and then they start doing all this crazy shit. To the point where now, like, my kids, you know, my stepdaughter is playing Buddy Holly the other day, like, or the other day, but, like, you know, a couple of weeks, couple of years ago, and being like, how do you know that? And then she's showing me all the memes, and it's even tied into the amazing digital circus, like, and now, like, you know, they've gotten into meme culture and stuff, and it's like, how is this band that is loved by so many, but is also cringe as hell, endured for almost 40 years? It's bizarre. So basically, I guess in our own way, like, not that we're trying to sell you on this, I think we're just trying to sell to each other, trying to figure out, like, why are they, how are they still here?
And in learning stuff about them for this and also just in general, Rivers Cuomo is one of the most, like, interesting human beings in existence, which sucks because he's also very, like, I also don't like him very much. I don't know. I have really strong mixed feelings about Rivers Cuomo.
And I feel like that's kind of the point. I don't think we're supposed to like him if we're thinking about it.
To me, this man desperately, above anything else, that's like his MO is to be liked.
Yeah.
He wants to be accepted so bad. And yet cannot just bring himself to do the thing that most people want him to do.
And as a creator, I mean, obviously I'm not a musician and definitely not in any sort of Weezer terms, but just as someone who does create things, I, to a certain extent, understand that sort of dichotomy of wanting to do the thing you want to do because it's your art, you're the one that's making it, but also wanting to be accepted by the people who may not understand what that art is and wanting to sort of appease those people, but also then appease yourself, because the guy could have easily done Blue Album 40 years running and would have probably been fine, but didn't. And I guess that's the part that's almost weirdly fascinating. Something I do kind of appreciate is that, good or bad, which a lot of it is, at least in my mind, objectively bad, but at the same time, it's like, look, he's at least he's following his muse. You know what I mean? Like, not a lot of people are doing that. When it would have been so easy to just hone in on this one thing people want you for, but you don't give it to them. You give them a version that's just a little bit different. And yet, I don't know, it's just the weirdest, most fascinating thing. And I guess we should probably just start somewhere, because Blue Album's kind of been talked to death. Pinkerton's, like, and that's the hard part. We originally wanted to start at the Green Album, which was, what, 2001, if I'm not mistaken?
Correct.
Which was their, I guess, comeback album, self-titled. But even getting to that story is weird.
Yeah. The time in between kind of the wrapping up of Pinkerton into the hiatus, into the kind of reformation of the Green Album and Weezer as this kind of different thing, because it is different. The release of the Green Album, despite it on the surface kind of... You could look at the Blue Album and look at the Green Album and say that they're similar. And in some respects, they are. But in a lot of ways, they're not. This is a different band doing different stuff. And it's not just losing Matt Sharp that changes things.
Which was a large part of it, because I think even I sometimes forget just how big an influence Matt Sharp has on early Weezer. Like, weirdly enough, as much as we're led to believe that Rivers is like the leading man in all this, like he's the lovable loser or whatever, it's kind of Matt Sharp that makes this band endure, at least early on, at least to me.
So and this analogy's been done to death, so apologies for retreading it, but like Rivers and Matt Sharp balance each other out very much in the way that like John and Paul and the Beatles kind of did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like you need one to kind of ground the other, and you need one to kind of smooth out the rough edges of the other. And I think unfortunately, depending on what your opinion of things is, we kind of see that once they split. I love the Rentals, you love the Rentals, but the Rentals were not a commercially successful band.
And that's wild because like they're not commercially successful, but like as far as from musicianship and even just overall perception, like, you know, they get a lot of respect. You know, they still do and they always have. And honestly, even though their releases are like sporadic, each of those albums is a certified banger.
Yeah. And on the other end of things, you have Weezer that has continued to release music and has been, for the most part, commercially successful-ish.
Mm-hmm.
At least enough for them to keep a record deal and to keep touring and all this stuff. But they're not a band that I think most critics look at their newer stuff on favorably.
One would argue that a lot of that good critical buzz kind of, you know what, maybe that's a bit of a hot take, but I feel like it kind of lives and dies with the Blue album and Pinkerton.
The Green album, in looking at reviews of it, they do tend to skew pretty positively. There are some reviews that will point out that, you know, it's short and the songs are what they are and blah blah blah. There are detractors, obviously, but for the most part, like, the Green album got solid reviews. I didn't look at the reviews on albums past the Green album, so I can't really speak to that. But I know once we get into like the Lil Wayne years and doing all the covers and all that stuff, that one can only imagine that, you know, Pitchfork and Rolling Stone and websites and publications like that are not looking on that kind of stuff too favorably.
Right. Because in my heart of hearts, I was willing to make this almost a mini series of its own, of just even breaking some of this stuff down, because the original premise was, as like I said, I cite them as one of my favorite bands, but there is a drop off point where once we get to maybe like Red album around there is where that was like the last Weezer album that I actually bought, like the deluxe edition for the extra tracks kind of stuff. And that album is definitely a mixed bag.
Yeah.
But after that, I kind of drop in here and there, kind of poke my head through the door, see where they're at. And it's like, I keep thinking, oh, this is not going to work out. And then somehow they'll go through a few down albums, then come up with another banger, because honestly, the White album, weirdly, is probably like the last Weezer album where I'm like, hey, they're actually kind of on something here. Like, they're actually, like, mm-hmm. It's something positive, I mean. So there's these pockets of time that I just miss, and I kind of wanted to go through some of those, which maybe sporadically will kind of come back to the stuff, and it will be its own series. But I wanted to start at the Green album, because I feel like this is where, now that we're doing Comeback, you know, this is where we get what ultimately becomes kind of, you know, Weezer in perpetuity. And yet, like I said, we can't even talk about that without talking a little bit about Pinkerton, which, did you by any chance read that one quote, I guess, when he was being interviewed by Los Angeles Times back in 2001 about the Green album?
Do you want to paraphrase it for me?
Sure, no worries. Well, I guess to kind of go into some of the more Pinkerton stuff, so as Ashley referenced, Blue album happens, Weezer are a household name. The dudes that are talking about X-Men in their garage are now like superstars. And obviously that fame does a lot of things to a lot of people. Rivers, turns out, doesn't take to it very well. And not to mention that in 95, like, I guess he had surgery on his right leg because one leg was shorter than the other, I guess, basically since birth. So he's doing physical therapy and he was hospitalized and he has to use a cane and he's on heavy painkillers. And then he's at Harvard, basically, where he writes a letter about his disillusionment with the rock lifestyle with the quote, "You will meet 200 people every night, but each conversation will generally last approximately 30 seconds. Then you will be alone again in your motel room, or you'll be on your bus in your little space, trying to kill the 9 hours it takes to get to the next city, whichever city it is." So, and it sounds a little cliche, but he's obviously doing, like, you know, he's clearly burdened by his newfound fame. So by the time he's writing Pinkerton, he's in a pretty dark place, which obviously that album tells us as much.
Not to sidetrack you any further than hi, hello, we do. Did you read about the whole, what Pinkerton was supposed to be originally?
Oh, the only thing I remember, at least from my knowledge of when the album came out, wasn't it supposed to be like based off of Madame Butterfly or something?
No, it was this concept album about is like songs from a black hole or something like that.
What?
So it's all like weird, like Tom DeLonge, Angels and Airwaves, space shit.
Are you serious?
We almost. But also being a metaphor for fame and how it's bad.
That's crazy, because I just heard about the Madame Butterfly thing, and so are we able to believe then that if it's a concept album, then is him writing letters to potentially not of age fans? Is that supposed to be someone else and not him?
It doesn't say.
Because that's wild.
Yeah.
Because, and that's the thing, like, if you grew up listening to Buddy Holly's Say It Ain't So, I remember when I went to go buy the Pinkerton the first time, I think it was with my dad, and as often we would go buy CDs, or well, he would buy CDs, I would get a CD, neither here nor there. So I remember being like, oh, other Weezer album, I didn't listen to this one, and then just reading like the track listing, and then the first one there is like Tired of Sex, and I'm like, I don't think this is gonna be like Buddy Holly. And it wasn't until a few years later that I listened to it. And, like, I think I even joked about this in another podcast about the fact that we go from, you know, what's with these homies dissing my girls, to be like, oh, man, I had so much sex with all these women. And, oh, my gosh, I can't believe the fame is just so bad. It's just like, oh. And it sounds, and I know we talked about this when we were talking about Drake, where like there's something about a very well-known celebrity kind of doing a not a humble brag, but kind of like talking about how bad fame is, but it always sounds so cool. It's like, dang, I can't believe I took all these pills and slept all these women and drove this exotic car. Damn, my life's hard. And it never is endearing, because most people are like, bro, shut up.
Like, give me the chance to feel as empty as you do, Mr. Drake, please.
Because, like, this whole album, you know, and we're doing, like I said, did it age well? Not at all. However, matter of fact, he has a quote about that. Here we go. Because basically, I'll get to the other quote, but this one talking about the album, where he says, it's such a hugely painful mistake that happened in front of hundreds of thousands of people. It continues to happen on a grander and grander scale and just won't go away. It's like getting really drunk at a party and spilling your guts in front of everyone and feeling incredibly great and cathartic about it, and then waking up the next morning and realizing what a complete fool you made of yourself.
Oh, Rivers.
Because you know me, I'd rather my art be honest than comfortable and make me feel good. But oof, man. Oof. If you were just here for vibes, you did not get vibes on Pinkerton.
No. So, okay. I have a question for you, and then I think we can kind of call this part done. So around the same time that Pinkerton is happening, and Weezer is breaking up and getting back together, there's another band, a similar band in this scene, that is kind of doing the same thing. They release an album, they get a hit single off of it, things are going great, they record a follow-up that's edgier and more serious, and they're kind of taking themselves a bit more seriously and doing different things, and it critically and commercially bombs, and it destroys the band essentially. And the head of the band goes on to have a pretty lucrative solo career, is critically and commercially successful and all this stuff, and now Ben Folds is like the artistic advisor to the symphony of the Kennedy Center and is taken very, very seriously. And is like a well-loved elder statesman of this kind of alternative scene and is seen as kind of like a musical genius.
Hmm.
Do you think Rivers wants to be Ben Folds?
At one point in my life, I would have said yes, but I feel like deep down, Rivers wanted to be Gene Simmons, but is Ben Folds. And neither should they meet, because like they're just two polarizing things. Because mm-hmm. Ben Folds is an absolute dork ass, said wholesomely and lovingly.
Yeah.
But yet we love him for it. Like, this is the guy that performed Comic-Con one year, and I'm like, this is a weird pull. And yet it was one of the greatest shows I'd ever been to. Meanwhile,
No, I was just gonna say, and this is Ben Folds that after making pop music for about 20 years was like, I'm not really interested in doing that anymore. I'm gonna write a symphony. I'm gonna work with orchestras. Like, that's where this has taken me, and has taken this turn towards like doing acapella stuff, and is producing and you know, is writing books and doing like serious NPR style, like we're talking quietly for reasons I don't really understand kind of podcasts. And everybody takes Ben Folds super seriously. And I wonder if Rivers would want that. I also kind of wonder if Ben Folds would want, if there's some part of Ben Folds that's like, man, it would be kind of sick to just like phone it in and play the sweater song at baseball games for the next 35 years.
Right. Which is a really good question, because I feel like, not that I know obviously no one's a monolith and everybody has their own thoughts about things, but I would imagine that at the end of the day, most creators want to just be able to make the art they want to make when they want to make it. But yet we're also in the situation where, I always think about that line in Spider-Man Homecoming when Peter tells Ned, is like, I'm just going to be myself. And Ned was like, dude, nobody wants that.
Poor Spider-Man.
And deep down, I think, you know, both would like to be able to do different things. But I feel like, at least on the surface, Folds seems like he sort of more knows where he is, like his lane and where he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Rivers kind of figured it out, at least later on, but at least in this period that we're talking about specifically, you know, their success felt fleeting because it happened so soon. And now he's like, oh shit, I'm kind of, you know, I'm now in this place. I almost feel like, in a weird way, like, again, weird take, but like, bear with me here. It almost mm-hmm. feels like Pinkerton was to Rivers what like In Utero was to like Nirvana and Cobain, where in the process of almost making the anti Nevermind or the anti Blue album, they fucked around and actually made something even weirdly more impactful, albeit off-putting.
And like, as a Radiohead fan, like, off-putting can be okay. There's a lot of music that I like that could be described as off-putting. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah.
Well, when it's your second album, because even Radiohead doesn't sound like Radiohead in those first few albums, at least as far as my limited understanding. Or, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Like, Radiohead then doesn't sound like Radiohead now. I'll put it that way.
Yes. I think there's always a part of them that's going to be sad and British. Because that's just who they are. Said with all the love of my heart. I love Radiohead. We all know this. But I think you're right. The first two Radiohead albums do distinctly feel different from the rest of the catalog. It does take them a little bit of time to kind of get into what we begin to think of as Radiohead.
And the reason why I mentioned, you know, Gene Simmons in that comparison is that as much as Rivers was kind of disillusioned by that fame, I think deep down, and again, not to kind of make it about the rest of us, but I feel like there's always that part of, you know, especially creating publicly, where you want the adoration, you want the pyrotechnics, you want, you know, the girls throwing themselves at you, or men, or whomever. You know what I mean? Like, you want that, like, you know, we all have in some way looked at this sort of celebrity kind of rock star life to varying degrees and been like, that scene's kind of cool. And then, of course, it's more often bad because I'm like, you're not used to this. This isn't what you signed up for. So I think that's kind of the issue, whereas at least with Ben Folds, he mostly figured it out for a little bit fairly early on, whereas Rivers is like, this thing's kind of fucking me up, but I still kind of want it. And I almost feel like with the Green album, he kind of told on himself on Pinkerton with the Good Life, where it's like, I want to get back to this good life, you know, like, I want to go back to the debauchery. I want to go back to the fame, but I've kind of put myself out there. Now everybody knows I'm kind of weird and odd, so I can't just hide this rock star persona. So now I feel like the last 25 years has been Rivers trying to be like, wants to just be the elusive rock genius, but it's like, we know too much about him now.
Well, and I think the Kiss comparison is apt, where I think you're right. I think Rivers wants to be Gene Simmons, and I think Ben Folds wants to be akin to like an Elton John or a Billy Joel. More, yes, the piano aspect of things, but more in that like songwriter, the style of songs that is performed as well. And that type of performer. And I like Elton John. You like Elton John. Elton John's not Kiss. Those are different things. Those are different goals. I think that Kiss comparison is apt. There's a lot there that you can kind of see, like good stuff and bad stuff, where we are doing like, we've got a cool logo that kids can draw in their notebook, and it's kind of, we do kind of flashy shit, and there's the kind of merchandising marketing side of things where Weezer's putting their logo on a lot of different shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, the parallels are there. But again, Kiss is a band that was around for a very long time. And like, yes, they kicked ass, I guess. I don't know. I don't really like Kiss. I have some baggage with it. It's fine. We don't have to go into that right now. That's not a band that speaks to me on a molecular level, but I get it. They're also not a band that critics took very seriously. Again, they were commercially successful, but you're not sitting down to a Rolling Stone review saying that these guys have, you know, written the great American rock song in the 90s. Like, that's just not what they were doing. They were a touring act. They were a concert band. They were for, you know, middle-aged white guys to go get drunk at their show and watch Gene Simmons blow fire out of his face and wear tall shoes. Like, it's different stuff, different goals.
And I think that wrestling back and forth between these two, and I guess eventually landing somewhere in the middle, is sort of where now coming into the Green album was interesting. And I guess you could probably, I'll say this leading into the next episode, but what's interesting is Rivers ultimately makes an out, like, as much as Pinkerton was the anti-Blue album, Green is the anti-Pinkerton. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is when we get there, we're getting the affable dork again, but unfortunately that dork has lived a little too much. And this is where his lyrics start getting vaguely hostile, almost like, not passive aggressive, but definitely like microaggression.
Uh-huh. It's one of those where like, oh, you want Buddy Holly again. All right, here's Buddy Holly again to the nth degree. But also, I am pissed about it.
Because like, I want to read this quote because I found it like earlier today and I think it's perfect. And I almost might reread it come the opening of the next, because I think this is kind of a good encapsulation, at least, of that.
Mm-hmm.
The fans are going to say he doesn't sing with any feeling anymore. He's not letting his feelings out. And the truth is, I miss that too. But all things considered, I think this is a stronger record. This record stands on its own without having to manipulate people's emotions. I would like to say one thing, and it's that I hope people stick with us. All these records are just phases I go through, and when you're younger and kind of inexperienced, you go through more extreme phases. And Pinkerton is maybe on the emotional extreme side. This record is on the anti-emotional extreme side. And I hope people stick with us, because in the future, I'll be going back and forth and probably finding some middle ground that makes us all happy. And that was Rivers Cuomo, Los Angeles Times, 2001.
And I'll just say this and then we can go from there. I don't know that ever happened.
Exactly. And I feel like with each subsequent album post 2001, and we'll get there if we ever talk about 2005, he's still pissed about it.
Yeah. So.
Damn. This shit's kind of dark.
Yep. But it's not all doom and gloom. I think next time we'll get into a little bit more about the Green album, which is a fun album, good time.
But it's not. It's so not.
I'm trying to make them come back.
They'll, okay.
You can't tell them that shit's more depressing next time. They're going to be like, well, that's depressing. That's not a way to sell it.
Okay, if that's the case, then, I mean, why are you listening to us? I'm kidding. Please continue listening to us. TLATpodcast.com. Our episode archives are there. You can email us through there. TLATpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Instagram and Blue Sky at those very same handles, TLATpodcast. We're on YouTube now. As a matter of fact, kind of big news real quick. We have started posting our archives on YouTube. So by the time this episode comes out, at least episodes 1 and 2 of our full episodes will be there. Please like and subscribe and hit that bell icon to join the TLAT Special Forces.
Yes. We're going to have to get a logo designed for the TLAT Special Forces.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. I'll talk to you about that after we're done.
Got it.
Because, oh, my God. Ever since we made that first joke, because I keep thinking about your Decemberist bit, it's so funny to me. Oh, my God. It's just a bunch of, like, dudes in, like, army uniforms that just look like Colin Malloy. Just holding a guitar like it's a rifle.
And Rivers Cuomo.
Oh my gosh.
Synergy.
Jargon.
Oh, never badmouth Synergy.
Oh man. Do you have any kind parting words for friends until the next episode? Which there will be, keep an eye out, there will be a part 2 to this. So look out for that.
Don't get swallowed by a knockdown, drag out whale.